I'm Derek.
And I'm Noah, and you're listening to A Bite Of,
where we take our current favorite pop culture obsession and enjoy it one nibble at a time.
Pop culture, meaning fandoms, TV, movies, all that fun stuff.
I want there to be a serial called Pop Culture Obsession.
Ooh.
Pop Culture Obsession.
Trademark.
We're making a serial, people. That's right.
Oh my God.
It's gonna be delicious.
We could do our pampered pop culture Patreon stuff while eating.
Yes.
Didn't we did a cereal one, right?
Yeah. Yes, we did. We did a cereal where we tried all of the Halloween cereals.
Yeah,
like Count Chocula, Boo Berry. They're coming out with a new one, by the way.
What? Didn't they come out with Fruit Brute or whatever?
Fruit de Brute. Yeah. He was an old one that they brought back. They made a brand new one with a female presenting monster on the box that's caramel apple flavored.
Oh, ew.
Caramel apple.
No. All right. Well.
So October, folks, look forward to us trying that and for the release of Pop Culture Obsession, the cereal. Start your mornings with Pop Culture Obsession.
We'll have to go through the logistics. Maybe we'll ask our Discord what the flavor and stuff should be.
Yeah. Should there be varieties? Also, how do you make a cereal?
Roast some oats.
Oh, we're doing it homegrown. Okay. Okay. You know, I make a mean granola. I do.
All right. So this is the third episode. Halfway. Secret Invasion. We're halfway through this, which is crazy to think about. It feels like it was just yesterday when we saw Samuel L. Jackson again reprise his role as Nick Fury. We're halfway through.
It felt like just yesterday when we saw Maria Hill die for some reason.
For some reason. But I have to task you operatives with a quest, a mission. Follow us on all social media platforms. We're there. We like it. Say hi. You know, Threads just came out.
I was going to say, are we on Threads?
Yeah, it's there. You know, well, all of them. We're on all of them. We'll see which one lasts.
Every time I go on Instagram now, it says I have a notification. I'm like, whoa, someone interact with me. And then I go on it and it's like, so-and-so posted on Threads.
Yeah.
Go download it, you fool.
Yeah. So that's one of your missions as an operative of A Bite Of. Also, we have a Patreon, $1 a month or a trial. You get to experience our before the MCU episodes. The next one this month is The Punisher, 1989's Punisher. It's going to be very hard to find. We'll see about doing maybe a watch party type situation on Discord.
Oh,
because it's on YouTube and we'll just put it out there for you guys to watch. It's a little easier. The first one we did was Howard the Duck. That was a lot of fun. So if you want to listen to that, go there.
I feel like I'm so intrigued by this, The Punisher, because I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah. I mean, apparently none of the streaming platforms nor anywhere where you can rent movies think it exists either, because it's nowhere to be found and it's very expensive to buy it. So, yeah.
So YouTube it is.
Yeah. And then last but not least, subscribe, review, all that great stuff. We got to talk about this episode, so let's just get into that.
Yeah, so let's take a look back at Secret Invasion Episode 2, Promises. Back in 1997, we see Nick Fury promising a group of Skrulls, including a young Gravik, that he and Captain Marvel will find them a new home if they pledge to help defend the Earth. Spoiler alert, they didn't find them a new home. Flash forward to the aftermath of the Moscow bombing, and Fury is whisked away by Talos. On a train ride, Fury discovers that there are 1 million Skrulls living on Earth. He's mad, so he kicks his friend off the tracks. After fighting with Talos, he meets Rhodey, who essentially fires him from his post. Meanwhile, Sonya is quite good at the torture, and Gaia discovers the ingredients of a super Skrull. Having nowhere else to turn, Fury goes home to his wife.
Surprise, she's a Skrull.
Surprise, he has a wife. So
why'd you go Italian? I thought you were doing Borat.
I was trying to do Borat. I'm not good at my Borat. You know, I slip in and out of my accents.
I think it's fine. I don't think it's a prerequisite.
You know what set me off was the Frutti Brutti. Okay. So now I'm at his wife.
I knew I was going to regret bringing up that video.
Frutti Brutti. So let us officially take a bite of Secret Invasion Episode 3, Betrayed.
Yeah. Spoilers ahead. All the secrets will be revealed for episode 3. We don't want to betray you. with spoiling it. Go watch it, come back. It's shorter than all the other weeks. So here we go. This episode's probably going to be shorter than all the other weeks as well.
there's a lot of conversations happening in this episode.
All right, so give me your instant reactions for this episode. We're halfway through it. Pieces are continuing to move. How are you feeling? Let's do a little check-in.
Okay, so this is how I'm feeling. I'm feeling like this. Huh? And then I'm feeling like, okay. And then I'm like, wait a minute. And then I was like, oh no. So that's how this episode made me feel.
And I can actually pinpoint every moment that you were feeling that.
Right?
Accurate.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's the only way I could describe
how I was feeling.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite things of this episode was kind of seeing Talos take charge a little bit, being like the fierce badass that he is, being like, Fury, step up. And then he's also like, watch this, because I'm so strong. You ain't got nothing without me. So that I appreciated.
Yeah, he did really do some digs at him. It's pretty nice.
As he should.
Yeah, it did seem like this episode, Talos kind of stepped up a bit, especially from the first one. He got knocked back a little bit whenever Fury killed that scroll in front of him. It seems like now he's kind of pushing a little further. And I don't know if that's because Gaia is more helping. He has his daughter back. You know, maybe that's why. I liked it. I didn't think it was the strongest one out of the series. There's definitely scenes in here and things that were happening that were really cool and better than some of the other episodes. But I do have to say this is probably like the second best episode. I want to say the second one was probably peak so far for me.
Yeah, I agree.
It's really funny, right? This episode is just like a sting operation to find a mole. Mm-hmm. And that's what this whole episode is, which is really funny and kind of interesting to do for a series that only has six episodes.
Yeah, this episode felt very much like a bridge trying to get us to the next episode. It's
right.
Kind of like figuring things out, uncovering some more powers stuff. But other than that, yeah, you're right. It's kind of, this is our midway point, and we're just kind of doing a sting operation on the bad guy side where the good guys are kind of pawns.
Right, in that sting operation.
In that sting operation.
Right. Which is fine. You know, the sting operation is catastrophic, right? And it's like, it does have consequences if it actually went through. But the fact that Gravik was like, I need to find the mole. Let me like try to start World War III just to find this mole.
Yeah, I know. I know what I'll do. I know. Nuclear war.
Let's shoot down that UN plane. Why not?
We got this. Just, guys, get on that sub real quick. Infiltrate.
So going into the episode, we get a good conversation with Fury and his wife, Priscilla. And I think we needed it because we had some questions after the second one. And we were like, wait, so did you not talk to her? Like, this is weird. Like, where was she? How did this relationship work while you were up on your space station? It turns out he just left her.
Yeah. The question of how did it work? The answer is it did not.
It didn't. She was still very calm, cool, and collected for him to just show up.
Well, that's just her vibe.
Yeah.
Right? She's just vibing. She's like, I'm living in this mansion in England. Oh, look who's back. I'm going to continue cooking dinner.
Maybe that's why she shifted into her human form. I mean, it seems like she is in her human form around him. And I don't know if that's just for budget reasons and they don't want to keep doing that. But maybe just presenting because she has a human relationship. Maybe that's just how she does it. And she's more comfortable in that skin now.
And
I'm
maybe,
not sure.
Yeah, maybe there's just something to be said about like how Skrulls exist on Earth. And there's always the chance that someone can come to your door or someone can walk up to a window. So you want to be in the form that they would be used to.
Right. Not a Skrull.
Yeah. What the heck? Who's sauteing that broccoli?
Here's your Instacart order. Oh, my God.
Amazon. Whoa. Cable guy.
But it is really messed up. And I don't blame her for holding resentment towards Fury because he was gone during the blip. So 5 years, came back and was like, bye. I'm still going to leave. So like there's close to a decade of just her not being with her husband. And she was, apparently she wasn't snapped out of existence. So she was just waiting around. And then she's like, great, he's back. Oh, cool. I have to grieve you. So the line where she says that I'm a widower twice.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I kind of don't blame her.
I don't blame her either. I mean, it's that conversation of what is Fury putting first in his life? And it feels like he put his job first.
But he even, like, he didn't even communicate with Maria Hill either. It's like he kind of just disconnected and went the furthest distance he possibly could.
Is it one of those things of him being like, the less people who know where I am, the less danger there is for them?
Maybe. That seems like a very spy thing to do.
Because otherwise, he's just a dick.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a part of that, too, where he just was selfish and not understanding what he was doing to the people.
I mean, I get like a little edgy if you're out running errands for like an hour and I haven't heard from you. I'm like, well, he's gone forever. So
we live in New York, so errands could take an hour.
I can't imagine what she felt with him in space.
Not talking.
So, yeah, and I completely get it. It's also that thing of, I've been leading a life now for how many years?
Right.
I'm happy to see you're here. I'm happy to see you're alive, but I'm kind of in the middle of something.
Yeah, like, you don't come into my life out of nowhere when you want to and tell me
right
how to do things and ask me questions. I'm going to ask you questions.
Absolutely.
And I liked how she was very much, like, in control of the whole situation because it is her house. It's her territory. She knows what she's doing.
This is the perfect illustration of how to have a conversation with your spouse. You keep cool, calm, and collected. You keep it to I feel feelings and statements, and you just say how you feel.
And you let them take a call when they need to take a call.
Yes, a call. That was not even a hello.
There is some theories going around, and it actually made me, this is one of the theories where I was like, oh, this actually makes some sense. So there's theories about his glasses that he's wearing. We know that his glasses can show infrared, right? They're spy glasses. Let's say they're a lot like, you know, Edith or, you know, Tony Stark's glasses that Peter Parker got.
Yeah.
They can do a variety of things. It's interesting when he decides to wear his glasses and when he doesn't. Most of the time when he's not wearing his glasses, he's around Talos. But when he is wearing his glasses, he's around Rhodey. He's around Graphic. He's around all these other people. So I'm curious if the glasses can also sense when somebody's lying, like heartbeat and stuff like that. And it seems like he was really focused on her when he was asking her questions. And then the scene where she takes the call, he turns his back from her. And I don't know if that was a reason of like, oh, something in the glasses can hear the phone call that's like by the ear so that he kind of turned so he could hear it. It's interesting. Like, I think once I started seeing people talk about that, I was like, that makes some sense because he's wearing glasses in certain places, but not. Like, why not just wear them all the time, especially if they're super spy glasses?
I think that's actually really interesting. And we have to remember, while we are seeing it as the viewer, as Fury being the pawn in all these other people's plans, we have to have faith that Fury knows what's going on to some extent. We just don't know what he knows and what he's doing.
He's definitely going to know more than he's letting on and that we're going to see, because he's going to act a certain way in front of certain people to get what he wants.
Right. And also, let's not forget, he was living in space on an alien spacecraft, so he has tech from them.
True.
Right?
Yeah, I mean,
you're like, he came back to Earth with absolutely nothing. No weapons.
Just glasses.
Just glasses. It's got to be special in some way.
We did get some flashback of them, their budding romance back in 1998. So we got a year after we first see Priscilla.
That meeting,
And when he made everybody pledge themselves to the human race and Fury's cause. She's still wearing that ring. I think it's interesting that they keep showing the ring, but she's not wearing it in the present time. I want to know more about this ring. Why are they showing it? It's, you know, they put details in movies and shows for a reason. I'm keeping my eye on that ring. I want to know when it comes off and why.
There's also the thought of being in love and wearing your wedding ring. And when someone disappears for X amount of years, you don't wear it anymore.
But
you don't have that allegiance to them.
She had it the year prior. So I'm curious if it is because of Nick or is it past? I don't know.
She married to someone else?
We should go.
Is Graphic her son?
No.
I don't know. I'm just saying, maybe.
No, his parents died, remember?
And then they died a brilliant death.
Yeah.
But did they both die a brilliant death?
Oh, that's a good question. Because I guess Nick wouldn't know if she was his parent or not.
Hello.
Yeah.
I don't know.
In this scene, we do see that she's passing a blood-stained envelope to Nick. And she mentions Dracoff. Dracoff is the villain of Black Widow. He's the runner of the Russian Red Room, the Taskmaster thing. I'm curious because of when this takes place, and she talks about, oh, this will, you know, help Dracov's men, blah, blah, blah. I'm curious if this is then the mission that Nick Fury sends Natasha on to save younger Taskmaster, or try to attempt to stop that bombing. And that's what it ends up disfiguring her in some way, which then led her to becoming Taskmaster. So I'm curious if a lot of these situations and the things that Fury sends his agents out to are because of Skrulls. And I think now we can infer that a lot of that actually might be because of them and not because Fury has some omnipotent intelligence and he's that good. He actually was just using his secret army.
And I think that even begs the question of how involved is Priscilla in all of these things
as
well. Seems
pretty involved.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that you know, what you're saying leads us to the conversation that he and Talos have, where Talos is saying to him, oh, you think you defeated this person because you're so great? Actually, it's because of us.
Right.
So Talos is coming out right out and saying it to him.
I feel like it's fair. It's a fair thing. You asked us to do all these things for you, to wear your guys' skin, to look like you, to work for you with the promise of finding a new home. I'm not saying this is Talos. I'm not saying that, like, I regret the things we did because it was good work, but, like, don't act like you did all of it yourself. A lot of it was us.
And
fair.
Fair, very fair. And I think that's something about Fury, right? We've had conversations earlier in this season saying, like, when are people with powers going to come in? What is Fury going to do? You know, how is he going to defend the Earth? And I think that really relates to this. Fury has a lot of power. Fury is a logistical, you know, savant. He knows where his superpower people are. He knows who he needs to go on what missions.
He has all the info.
He has all the info. And this is just another side of it. Another group that he, in a way, uses or, you know, works with, probably in his mind is not using them, but maybe to them it feels like using them.
Yeah.
And, you know, Fury, it's great that you're getting all the glory, but don't forget about all your soldiers.
Yeah.
You know, and that actually kind of mirrors something that Gravik says in this episode as well. When he's looking at the painting with Talos, he's like, look at all these men in this room that make the decisions. They sit there and they get to look pretty. But what about the soldiers? What about the warriors? And kind of Fury is the person sitting in the room a lot.
It is an interesting, you know, Gravik's ideology and the way he operates is not good. It's verging on like culty, especially when him and Talos were talking and Talos grabs him and everybody doesn't change into a Skrull. They change into him. It's very like a little too much.
You will become your leader.
You will all look like me. Mm-hmm.
Drink the Kool-Aid.
Right. But so it's mirroring each other. And Talos and Gravik have some sort of, you know, wherewithal to be like, yes, Fury does what he does and he's a great person. But he is the person in the room sitting there getting painted or photographed while everybody else out here is dying and doing the work.
Yeah.
Gravik is just taking it. Gravik. I keep saying Gravik.
I know. I feel like I want it to have a KS or an X at the end of it, but it's Gravik.
Yeah, at least this one has a vowel instead of Clurt. Clurt has no vowels.
Good old Clurt and an apostrophe. Yeah. Don't forget about that. Gaia got the apostrophe, though, this time around.
But she has vowels.
That's true.
So two. It's fine. But that whole scene, I loved that scene. I loved them hashing it out. You know, Talos came in hot with, okay, you do understand, like, have you not seen how humans react when their world or species is in danger? There's a thing called the Avengers. How many threats have they stopped? How are you, like, few Skrulls going to possibly overthrow all that? Maybe they could take over normal people because they have been doing it. But whenever superpowered people are going to come into this, we know our heroes are somehow going to throw them over. But the question is, how is that going to happen if Fury, Talos, all of them aren't telling these superpowered people that could help them? So now it's normal people, or who we think is normal people, mm-hmm. not a Skrull, going to overthrow this.
And I even think we need to sort of think a step further in the fact of which of our superpowered heroes might be Skrulls, right? Because when we think back to the comic book series Secret Invasion, half of them were Skrulls.
Yeah, which is insane because it's like they took them from way back And like they've been scrolls this whole time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's another level of this conversation. I don't know if Secret Invasion will necessarily get to that level, but I think that we have to think about that, seeing that in this small cast of people that we have now, we know that we can't really trust that many of them, maybe two.
Right. There's this interesting kind of parallel that goes on too with how Gravik is talking to Talos and talking about how humans are weak. They're blah, blah, blah. We need to take over all this stuff. But yet the Super Skrull stuff, the science behind that, it's not Skrulls doing it. He needed human science, human scientists, DNA research to do it. So it's like you're almost, I wouldn't say going as far as Fury, but you're doing almost the same thing.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about what it means to be a leader and who you're depending on to get what you want done.
Yeah, but you can't be like, he's doing it wrong. I'm just going to do it, but to get powers and make people work for me and do it. Like,
I mean, when it comes down to it, Gravik seems to not necessarily care about the means.
No.
He just needs the end.
Not at all. Not at all. I love the tension that was building between these two. I'm surprised I know it was a parlay, so you're not supposed to really, you know, do anything to hurt the other person. These leaders come and meet. I am surprised that Gravik didn't do anything. And in turn, it almost seems like because we know the whole plot with the submarine and the thing, he almost hoped something like that would happen. Maybe that's why he had Gaia take him there.
Well, I believe that's the whole point of this scene and this episode. Like we said, it's a sting operation. So Gravik can't kill the person or hurt the person that he is counting on to figure out who's leaking information from his side. So he's going to take whatever he's going to take from, you know, Talos, which in this sense is a knife in the hand, and let it happen because he needs to connect the dots. And, you know, number one person he's suspecting obviously is Gaia. So he's not going to kill her father or take her father captive because he needs to know that it's her that's releasing the information.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping it seems like Gaia has kind of, I'm not too sure what happened with the backpacks and the infrared and her information not necessarily being totally true. Maybe Gravik had assumed and he put the bomb somewhere else and didn't even put it on the people. And it seemed like Gaia's information was kind of slippery, but nothing ever came from that. You know what I mean? What Talos wasn't like, oh, Gaia gave us the wrong information. It really wasn't in the backpacks to distract us. So I'm curious if Gravik, even back then, had to assume that Gaia might have been compromised in some way. But I'm glad that it seems like Gaia is not necessarily fully on Gravik's side, and she knows that Talos needs to know all this information.
I think the thing with Gaia is that Gaia wants, at the base level, what Gravik wants, not necessarily total human domination,
but a home.
But he's taking it to a level that she's not comfortable with, which is nuclear war and death.
We, you know.
Right. But I do wish that we got a little more of seeing her repair her relationship with Talos, because they had a run in the first episode. There was the whole backpack thing. And then out of nowhere, they're like fully communicating with each other and she's doing intel for him.
Well, since this, so the episode does get the mole out, right? Gravik fully knows that Gaia is working with them and everything. So I'm assuming that she is maybe going to join forces with him and maybe they'll have more screen time together, because I do want that. I want more of them interacting with each other and working together. I think it would be a cooler dynamic aside from Talos kind of waiting for her to give her information and then risking her position and working with Nick and blah, blah, blah. So I'm hoping that since now she's kind of has to cut ties with all of them, that now she's fully on Team Talos and not Gravik.
Hashtag Team Talos. Yeah. Love you, Dad.
The submarine plot was fine. It's very much like Hunt for Red October situation.
Two keys.
Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Ghost Protocol. All of that. Two keys. Was it nuclear sub? Because it's usually like nuclear.
Yeah, nuclear. It was a nuclear sub.
It was?
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to blow up a plane with a nuclear bomb?
Mama.
That's a lot.
That's Gravik for you.
That's.
But
he said, you know what?
Yeah.
Find me the worst bomb. I want to blow up one plane.
Well, right. He needed people to be scared about this. He needed them to try and stop the plot because he needed to know who was the mole.
It would make sense. I mean, that's probably why he had his like second in command go.
Yeah.
That new person that guy brought in, and then some other guy.
A regular missile, no one would care about it. Nuclear, OMG.
But like, did he really sacrifice these three other Skrulls?
Because guess what?
Just
once he's got an army of super Skrulls, it don't matter about these weaklings anymore.
The poor new Skrull. He seemed like he really was like in on the cause. He's just too young.
Yeah, that's on Gaia. That's on Gaia. She whipped out that blue fruit. He was hypnotized and ready. And now look at him. Good job, Gaia.
Yeah, we got a really cool. I think this is really the only action set piece in this. This one, the action pieces are very far in between. So far in these three episodes, it's more towards the end of the episodes that we get something happening, guns being used, sneaking around. Again, this is the third episode with a lot of exposition, a lot of talking, a lot of grievances being put out into the open. When they're going to that general's house to get the code to stop the thing, it's a race against trying to stop that plot from happening. I liked it. I like those like trying to sneak into a place without getting detected, blah, blah, blah. The interesting thing about now, what we for sure know is that Nick says, even in Captain Marvel, nobody calls me Nick. They only call me Fury. He told Captain Marvel that. He just found in this episode when Talos was being held hostage with a gun against his head, either Talos said that or the person posed as Talos to tell him over the earpiece, "Oh, I'm fine, Nick. I was just beating up this guy." He knew something was wrong because nobody calls him Nick. So if we think back a little bit, who recently called him Nick? And it's Rhodey. Rhodey just recently called him Nick. And if Rhodey is Rhodey, I would assume that he wouldn't call him Nick in this series if it wasn't supposed to be a red flag.
Right. I mean, it is kind of, okay. I love that. I feel like that's a thing that happens in these, you know, body double things. Like, you know, you've never called me mom your entire life, but they,
that's,
you know,
Nick Fury saying that.
Yeah. You've never called me mom. You've only called me mama.
Mommy.
But it is sort of silly because we have these, whatever, mind zapping machines that apparently take every piece of information from the brain of the person. I mean, I guess in this instance, when he's quickly becoming Talos, he hasn't done a full brain scan.
Right.
But the Rhodey instance, you would think that they have Rhodey in a pod somewhere and they're, you know, going through his brain.
Maybe. I mean, but also that's where I'm kind of like, I don't think we'll know is if Talos said it to Fury to tip him off that something's happening, or if the guy that was holding him hostage said it and slipped.
Got it.
I think either way, it kind of like does what it needed to do.
Sure.
But I mean, even if you think back, I can guarantee you people called him Nick.
It could also just be a thing of Rhodey being like, "We're not friends anymore.
Nick.
I'm calling you Nick."
Yeah. But I think in this series, he said it two times where it's like, nobody calls me Nick. I think now from now on, when people call him Nick.
Red flag. Yeah.
Like we can't trust him. I can't trust anybody in the show. I don't even trust Nick.
What does his wife call him?
I don't know. Boo.
Does she call him Nick?
I don't remember.
Welcome home, you.
Yeah. Welcome home, stranger.
Good to see you, Fury.
Abandoner.
Yeah, there you go. Ghost.
I thought you were dead. Love of my life that left me twice.
Demon. Space ranger.
But how do you feel about the code being Zachary? The kid that was there that Fury so easily just held hostage and put a gun against his head. The code to stop the bomb was Zachary.
This is the problem with work from home situations. Okay. You are getting ready to launch nuclear war in your home office. Guess what? Your kid becomes a bargaining chip. Sorry.
I do want to say, and I don't mean to make it like serious or like, look far into it. This is just how my brain works, right? When Gaia goes to the guy that's in that tethering pod, whatever it is.
Gaia goes to the guy.
Yeah.
Giggity giggity.
And she's looking through the memories to try to figure out what possibly the code could be. I actually liked how that was set up. It looks like you're kind of looking underwater. It was a neat way to show
that. Yeah, it was like technical and but alien tech.
Right.
It was fun.
Right, on the nose. All of the things that you see is of the kid and him. So it's like you're seeing all these things, like going to the movies, doing something, and it's like all about the kid, which makes sense. It's like, okay, Zachary's the thing. But you have to think, like, the scroll isn't the kid's father, but he's probably been in that position so long that he's grown an attachment to the actual kid. So there's something to be said about how long they're like in those positions and how much they kind of change with that, because it's interesting, right? If he was really this just like shadow soldier and just trying to do a job,
kill him. What do I care?
Yeah, he wouldn't care.
Yeah.
But I think it does show that, you know, even when they are doing something like this for a cause, that there is some type of person in there that can't help form those attachments.
Well, that's one of the things about the Skrulls, is that they're not, you know, quote, like aliens. They are a race of humanoid species of
right.
people. And so they obviously have bonds, they have relationships, they know love, they have family, they have children. So I don't think that's so far off at all that they would grow attachment to these people.
But you know what they don't understand?
Tell me.
Is the relationship between people and dogs. Talos was like, wait, so you're telling me that it's okay for you to pick up this other species poop?
Yeah, when they showed that Dalmatian, I was like, they're going to make a comment. That Dalmatian's a Skrull.
It's a Skrull.
That's not Pongo.
Yeah. Did you notice? I'm sorry. This is just like a thing. I don't know why bringing up Dalmatian and stuff like that made me think of this. That Priscilla's human form skin has aged with her. When we see her in
1923.
We're doing the Punisher from 1989. So
it's in your brain.
She's younger, but when we look at her now, it's aged slightly. And I don't know if that's they don't want to pay for de-aging stuff, or she's kind of aging with fury, which is kind of sweet, I want to say. I'm just putting it out there. That's the only thing. That's the reason why I wanted to bring it up, because I feel like she doesn't totally hate him. She obviously still loves him.
Well, yeah. I think. And I also think there's, if you're going to be a good undercover soldier, you have to learn the ways of the planet that you're on. And so being young forever isn't what happens. So I guess you can kind of manipulate it.
Well, she's in the freaking woods. It's not like she... Yeah.
And she just stays there forever.
All right. So we are nearly done talking about this episode. I do have to mention our 1 minute of screen time of Sonia Fallsworth, because I love Olivia Colman. Every scene she's in, I don't think anybody can disagree that, one, she looks amazing. She always has clocks around her, and she always has a burn of some sort to say to whoever she's talking to. She found that spy gear that was on the owl.
The spy ball.
Was named Hoot. Now it's named Nicholas Fury.
And she gave it a little tiny eye patch.
So good.
Because you know why? We've been missing Fury's eye patch. So we're happy to see the owl is bringing it back.
I love that she was like, you know what? Here's your eye patch. Here it
is. I also like the thought of her crafting at her desk that afternoon.
She totally sewed that herself.
Yeah.
Yeah. She had a bottle of red wine. She was in a beautiful dark red dress. And she was like, you know what? I need to make an eye patch.
She really leads an interesting life. She is a torture extraordinaire, spy maven, also hashtag DIY crafter.
She's a crafter.
Yeah.
For sure. It's Sonia Crafts.
Yeah.
Get her. On all social media platforms.
She's going to be on the next season of Making It with Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman. And she's going to talk about how much she loves red wine.
And she will win, because if not, she will cut their fingers
they
off.
They will die. She will inject them with blood boiling.
In this scene, the only thing I want to say that was of note was the guy that she says that she's keeping an eye on, that she has a mole herself. And it was the guy that we saw her talking to from the owl thing, the redheaded guy. You know who that is?
Tell me.
And I only know this because I looked at the credits. It is the same actor that played Van Gogh in the Doctor Who episode.
Oh, the famous episode.
One of the best episodes. I just love to see him back. Also bring in all the British people because she's British, you know.
Makes sense to me.
Bring them all back.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So final two things we got to talk about. The big things in this episode. Again, this is following the same trend of the other two episodes where the end of the episode has some type of cliffhanger to bring you back next week. The first one we can talk about is Priscilla. She has another phone call. She says she wants to talk to Gravik. No, you're going to meet me here at this church. You're talking to me. She goes to a safety deposit box. She gets a gun.
A gun.
I don't know why she has a gun there.
I think that they sent her to the box and said, pick up what's in the box. And it's a gun. And she knows that the message is kill him.
Fury?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's the message.
Probably.
Because he's only a human. He just needs a bullet.
See, look, you're picking up on the spy craft really well.
Yeah, because she got there and she was like, yo, this is the fanciest bank I've ever been to. And I said the same thing.
It was a full 100% gold table.
Gold plated security deposit boxes and an ornate ivory and granite table.
No, welcome. The table was gold.
Gold.
Full gold.
It was fancy. Everything in that room was so fancy.
Oh, so we now know that possibly the person she was talking to when Fury was in the room at the beginning of the episode was Rhodey. Because here, when we hear the voice, it's clearly Don Cheadle. He was credited in the episode. Apparently, if you listen to the German dubbed version, the same actor that played Rhodey is also voicing it on the phone. It's Rhodey. So now we know that he is a Skrull. How long? That's the biggest question. I can't see it being far back, right? Because even stuff that happened in Falcon and Winter Soldier, the stuff that he did for Sam Wilson, the talking about how it's being black men in this country and everything like that, I don't think they'll go that far back.
Too personal.
It's too personal. And also it will take away some of that weight and the decisions to do that and write it that way. But again, we're at this weird place in Marvel where just because one creator did a thing, how are they going to tie it to that with the story they need to tell?
I'm interested in seeing, the question of how far back is still out there, but I'm really interested in seeing how he was captured.
I mean, I want to say, that is true. Because, it did seem like whenever she got the call, she either expected the call and knew it was going to be him, or maybe she just gets calls like that and she has to answer it.
Yeah, that's her work phone. So she knows she's getting calls like that on that phone.
Where Priscilla goes with this and what she's going to do with the gun, I think is an interesting question. I feel like we can trust her. I don't know if she's going to have... I feel like there might be some double spycraft, double agenting going on. She's either infiltrating it, and so is the Skrull that's playing Rhodey. Who knows? But we do know that when Talos and Nick Fury talk in that bar, when they first are like mom and dad are making up and they're not really fighting anymore, he says that I have a lead on somebody that is high up in the US government. Where he got that information from, like the last episode to now, makes me believe that he heard something on her phone and it was Rhodey. And that's how he's piecing those two things together. I don't know who to trust, right? It's like, are they bad Skrulls? Are they good Skrulls? Is Talos also doing something that Fury doesn't know about because he knows that he wouldn't like it?
I want to think that Talos himself has an army of Skrulls that he's working with, a group of people that he, or of Skrulls that he can trust. And maybe they're a part of it.
But like, why wouldn't he just like go to Rhodey and be like, hey, we need help because of this? I don't see Rhodey being like, no. Or maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
It's interesting. Also, where is Rhodey's body? Like
he's in the broke down warehouse in Russia.
No. You know what? That place is radiated like crazy. And there's human bodies just there. All of them are going to come out dead.
That is a question. Why are they keeping them alive? Once you take their form, you're done. If you've done a brain scan, you're done. They're not living anymore. You don't need to know anything about them.
Maybe it takes a while to like get all the information. Maybe they have it that way in case they need to pull information.
They got to download it to the USB.
Yeah, because it might be too much to download everything about somebody.
Yeah, they're uploading it to the cloud.
Yeah. The scroll
and
cloud.
As we saw, they're still using like MS-DOS, so it's going to take a long time for them to download all that info.
Except for in the lab. The lab had like super high-tech, like see-through Tony Stark tech. It's great.
That Gravik keeps all the good stuff for himself. Selfish.
Okay, Gravik and Gaia, we got to talk about this. The scene with Talos and Gravik whenever Talos stabs him in the hand, and it was a very graphic scene, and I did not expect to see that. We see that he has the healing powers of Extremis. Meaning he has gone through this, which I did like seeing because it means he believes in it instead of just like, I'm sure he tested people first, but he did it himself. So he's not like, oh, I just need to have like all these people die and keep testing it and then I'll do it. He already went through the procedure or flashing bulbs to get himself powers. So that's cool.
Yeah, they changed a few of them into goop. Yeah. Though once they got all that worked out, then he was like, okay, I'll go through it.
But it's not a good sign that he has the healing powers of Extremis.
No.
We know from the trailer he's going to get the extendable stuff from Groot.
Groot arms.
I'm wondering if it's going to be all four of those powers for every single one. Or can you pick and choose?
Or maybe because he's the leader, he gets all four, but everybody else can have one. Choose one, circle your number one choice, put two. Maybe you'll get number two.
Yeah. How did you like the name drop of Super Skrulls? That Gravik so very non-scripted and very not out of place and shoehorned into that conversation.
I mean, I think we were all like, duh.
Yeah. Oh, like when he said it, because he was like superpowered beings, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, don't you say it. Don't you say it. And he's like, Super Skrulls. I was like, you know what?
It's
fine.
You're like, it's like how everyone was waiting for Captain America to say
Avengers Assemble. Well, that took a decade and well worth it.
Exactly. So it did not have the same payoff for you.
Three episodes and you're talking to other Skrulls that are posing as the freaking prime minister. No
yeah,
thanks.
I mean, our man Gravik here, we have to really question how long he's going to be around and he needs to get all of his catchphrases out ASAP.
You know, I am one of those people where I don't like the one and done villains. I feel like some of them are fine. But I kind of want some of these villains to stick around. You know what I mean? Like, I want them to show up again. I don't want it to be like they're defeated, done. It's just kind of not how comics work. And I just want some of these guys to survive. I think it would be interesting if, depending on how the series goes, if Gravik survived and then Super Skrulls and stuff and they came back later on. Because I don't want Super Skrulls to be gone, mostly because the Fantastic Four has to happen. I'm just like, just don't die. Not all of you.
Well, hopefully the next time we see Super Skrulls, it'll be the actual Super Skrull Clerk with the Fantastic Four powers.
Yeah. So, you know, this episode wouldn't be complete without them yet again shooting one of the lead women characters.
Let me say something. Okay. There are only, at this point, two other female leads.
Yeah.
If they die.
Who's the other one?
Secret Invasion hates women.
Priscilla and Sonya.
Priscilla and Sonya.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're just shooting people.
Same exact way.
Yep.
Gravik goes out there and knows that Gaia did what she did, shoots her. Same situation that happened to Maria. He has a MO that he likes to do, apparently.
For someone with Super Skrull powers, he sure does like to rely
on a gun.
On a gun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He could be a little more inventive.
Less messy, quicker, shocking.
He's brutal.
Yeah.
He's a jerk.
She does revert back to her Skrull form. I do not believe she's dead. You do not get somebody like Emilia Clarke to sign on to an MCU property to
for
then
three
kill
episodes.
Her three episodes in. Maria Hill, I get, is a red herring. She's probably going to stay dead. I don't want to hear about the duplicates and all that stuff. I kind of hope she is still dead because if both of these characters come back, like I know Gaia's going to come back. Where's the stakes? Where's the consequences? Like, everybody's just going to die and come back. It's like, okay, cool.
Well, that's kind of the, I don't know if problem's the right word, but that's one of the things about this introducing the Skrulls is that anyone can die and then they could be like, it was the Skrull them.
Yeah.
You know, but
what I'm hoping doesn't happen.
Right.
Because Maria would have to come back as a Skrull or as the duplicate, like what with what was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Wherever they're holding Rhodey, Maria Hill is right next to
him. Stop. But I do, I feel like because she was in the lab and she did all that and she saw them use the machine on people, she knows what it is. She has to.
She used it on herself.
She had to have used it on herself. And so she's just going to heal. Because we didn't get a bleeding out scene, we didn't get a zoom out seeing Black Widow, Maria Hill just lying there dead and bleeding out. We didn't get that with her. If they didn't die on screen, they're not dead. That's a rule of a movie. Like, if we don't see it, it's not happening.
You know, and she is smart, so she knows that if she needs to convince him that she's dead, she has to revert back to her Skrull form.
And she looked cute. She looked cute as a Skrull.
She's a little baby Gaia.
Yeah. So, a lot of moving pieces, a lot of, again, exposition, we're finding stuff out. I feel like a lot of pieces have moved, and we need some people to actually make some moves. At this point, we're halfway through. We have to see where it's going. I can see it going towards stopping them doing the Super Skrull stuff. I feel like that's where it's going to go. I just need a little more. I feel like we're getting there.
I think, yeah, at this point, we actually have to sort of see the Skrulls attack or invade.
Well, they have.
But barely.
Yeah.
You know, we've heard about it. It's happened a lot off screen. Are we going to actually see them move?
Well, that's the thing about this, right? It's supposed to be a shadow war. It's supposed to be done without all these people knowing. So what is going to be the extent of like the all out? They're just going to fight in an open field in the middle of nowhere. Like that's what's going to happen, you know, like
back to Russia.
So at this point, I don't know who to trust. I don't know if I can even trust Fury. I don't know if there's a real Fury and a Skrull Fury. Something could be happening. Something feels weird about Fury, and it's either his secrets or there's something more. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we're still at that place of not knowing what the ultimate final kind of plan for this show is.
Or the consequences.
Or the consequences. Yeah. We don't know who to trust. We now are second guessing Priscilla. We're second guessing Rhodey. We don't know what's going on with Gaia. We don't know how many Super Skrulls there are now. So,
well, not the three that he just gave up.
In the submarine.
Yeah, I guess they could sneak off maybe. But that other dude was really trying to get the other guy to turn his key. It's not okay.
No.
He's not going to like that.
So we're still in the middle. Yeah. Very much so.
Literally.
Of this series.
So next week, we have episode 4. This month, just as a reminder, we're covering The Punisher from 1989. On our Patreon. So that's what we're doing this month.
July, baby.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I think the series ends this month. So
what does the future hold?
Yeah. Oh my God. All right. So till next week.
All right, folks. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to A Bite Of. Artwork and editing by our own Noah. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at A Bite Of Pod. And on Facebook at A Bite Of. If you have any questions, recommendations, or just want to say hi, you can contact us on abiteofpod.com. Please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review to spread the word. See you next time on A Bite Of. Bye!